to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning again. I was just saying it's been a little bit of a wild week trying to get up to Berkeley and back. The road's closed. Just got back yesterday afternoon. Has everybody been paying attention to what's happening in the world a little bit? I thought I'd talk today about practicing in distressing times, and specifically a kind of spirit of koan practice. So there are many, many, many resources to us, available to us in the Dharma for guidance and support in addressing distressing times, confusion, upendedness. Guidance in how to speak, how to regard others, no matter who they are or what they're saying. So how do we regard others with respect? How do we actually see them as aspects of reality? Where I work, they put out this wonderful little newspaper called the Dharma Wheel, or the Wheel of Dharma. And I, Shinshu and I think about, well, how do you teach? How do you support? What's important about this place, about supporting you, supporting us? What to say? And how to use right speech. And so I was with that spirit that I read this article by Reverend William Briones, who's the head minister at the Los Angeles Buddhist Temple. And he says about Trump, it's the T word. Listening to his bizarre ramblings and witnessing his narcissistic behavior, I wondered how anyone could have agreed with him or even seriously considered him as a viable candidate for the President of the United States. And he says, as he challenges everything that I hold most dear, everything that I hold most dear. And then he says, yet, as I reflect upon his repulsive diatribes against everything I hold near and dear, I sense that deep down inside, Mr. Trump and I share many traits. Okay? This is what struck me. First of all, he's right out there. Reverend Briones is right out there, like disgusting diatribes. I mean, he doesn't pull any punches. He's alive with his own opinions, his own thoughts, his own responses. And yet, where does that lead him? It doesn't lead him to hatred or othering in a negative way. It leads him to look at his own mind and heart. So there's more that he says, but I just wanted to share that with you. This is the spirit with which we engage with the stress with other. We don't hide from our own responses, and we certainly don't quietly sit and say, oh, well, it's all okay. But we allow the specificity of our responses to lead us to look at our own minds and say, yes, that too is in me. This distress that we feel or can feel requires a demanding discipline, like Reverend Briones, particularly when we're frightened or disgusted or heartbroken. Heartbroken at the ways we as human beings can harm one another and the planet. So this is not an abstract thing. Many in our community, including ourselves, we or our family could be deported in an ICE raid. Important services could be cut for us or people that we hold dear or people that we don't know. Denied health care, blocked from refuge, sent back to a dangerous situation. People have lost their homes to fraudulent bank practices. Their jobs in the world of work as it changes. This is on top of the suffering that we experience when we lose a child or become ill or a tree falls through our house. So this is nothing new. Things like this have been happening all along. We see the videos about young African American men being killed. We see them now. This is not new. It's just more vivid now. Samsara as a whole is more vivid now. So we say, well, what do we do? What do you do? How do you act for justice and harmony in the midst of all this? Again, there are many, many ways to do this. And I'm sure many of you have accessed many ways to do this. Just taking a breath. Taking a walk outside, enjoying the sunshine. Sitting zazen. Calling on the Buddhas and ancestors for guidance. Being aware of the taste of an apple. All these ways. Studying what is kind speech, what is right speech. So there are many, many ways to work with our minds and hearts, our relationships, our behaviors. And both Shinshu and I hope that you find this place as a refuge and a touchstone and a place to remember who you are together, that we remember who we are together. But one of the fundamental points of Zen practice is we ask how. We say, how is our name? How is our true name? How in this moment? How do I respond? In the middle of this event, when I'm confused, when I'm distressed, how? How? We listen deeply. How? What's and whys are really helpful. What's and whys can be, you know, what is this? That's another kind of question. What is this? Why did this happen? But we need not be colonized by these questions. How is the key? It's an active thing. With how, we're paying attention to the present and we're engaged, we're alive. We're deeply caring for all the aspects of a circumstance. How is about responding and acting and being a part. And how is undefeated? How is always available to us? If we fail, so be it. How? If we succeed, okay, how? Now. Next moment. Because mostly we act, life is so interconnected and alive, we don't know success, we don't know failure. We just know how. We just know respond. So this is the root of the Bodhisattva's life in the world. The Bodhisattva asks, how? With kindness and humor and engagement and ferocity. How? It is a kind of koan. In Soto Zen, we don't talk directly about koan so much. I do sometimes, but a koan is a fundamental question about the nature of reality. And I'm not talking today about the Rinzai tradition of following a curriculum of koans and answering them in a specific way, answering, responding. I'm talking about a kind of spirit. I'm talking about Genjo koan, what Dogen Zenji tells us, actualizing the fundamental point. Our lives are a koan. This moment is a koan. So what is a koan? That's a good question. That's a kind of koan. So a koan, this question about the nature of reality, is very, very specific and very particular. It's not some schmoozy notion. They're deeply personal. They express and work on us at our core. They turn us, challenge us at the very basis of our lives. How? They're not mind games. But, you can read all kinds of things about koans in the popular press or in the, we can have all kinds of ideas. But if we take it personally, it becomes personal. It becomes this event that happens. Ko means public. And on means record or case. So there's a kind of kung in Chinese. And so it's alive in Chinese and Korean and Japanese Zen tradition, Chan, Sun, and Zen traditions. Koans are very particular, like a legal case, right? Very, very particular. And yet, pointing to something universal. Pointing to something fundamental. Koans are not about your own personal opinion. They're touching that which is most... They lead us to touch that which is most basic. They call us to remember who we are. How calls us to remember who we are in this moment and express it directly. So an answer to a koan is not a fact or some tidy story. It's a full-bodied response. It's like, this moment, this is the answer to this koan. It could be completely different the next moment. How is like that, isn't it? In this moment, what is how? How? I don't want to think about how. I want to go to sleep. I don't want to face this. I want to fall into hatred or blame or something that's so satisfying and completely off the rails, take us completely off the rails. I want to gather as much information as I can to figure it all out. Well, good luck with that. How is about pacing. It's about humanity. It's about really remembering the source of who we are so that we can sustain ourselves. There are three qualities that are discussed in terms of koan practice that are also true about our practice, whatever you're doing. And those three dimensions are great doubt, great faith, and great determination. So, great doubt is not doubt about your capacity or doubt about whether the Dharma works or not. It's this fundamental, visceral question. What is this life? How? It's being faced with death or birth or an injustice. question, posture, wordless question and posture. Zazen is calm. Zazen is great doubt. Okay, it doesn't fit into easy categories. It's the posture and breath of great doubt, great faith, great determination. The image that's sometimes used for great doubt is a ball of fire that it's stuck. It won't go down and you can't spit it out. It's like a pool. That kind of like vividness, that kind of aliveness. Great faith is entrustment, is allowing oneself to really give over to the practice. In Dogen Zenji says, throw yourself into the abode of the Buddha and all is done by the Buddha. Throw yourself into the abode of the Buddha. Well, you can't do that without faith and trust, right? We've talked about this before, that there's a testing involved. You have to know. This is not suicidal here. Or at least not suicidal for the part of me that's most true. It might be uncomfortable. I might get turned around in ways I hadn't even imagined. But there's something true here that is worth my life. So, I'm willing to be turned by this. It's trustworthy. It's wholesome. So the practice, the community, the teachers, the Dharma, the practice. Your own being. This is great faith. Great determination is the capacity to keep going, to not give up. My father used to quote Winston Churchill, never give up, never give up, never give up. And this requires a relationship with hope. You know, we hear, was it T.S. Eliot, I bid my soul wait, but wait without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Or abandon hope, all you enter here. Or, you know, Zazen is hopeless. Well, all that's good, but we also have to have hope. We have to have an honest and mature relationship with hope. Which is not about expectation or gaining idea. It's about a spirit. I keep thinking of John Edwards, you know? John Edwards, the congressman. You know, you see pictures of him as a young man being hosed down, bitten by dogs, and here he is, still at it. Still at it. What? 50 years later? 40, 50 years later? There has to be some measure of hope that he has. And it's not... It's hope that by engaging ourselves fully, we are transformed. It doesn't matter whether, of course it matters whether good things happen or not. But it's the spirit of the bodhisattva, is the spirit of, I know, it's the spirit of great faith and great doubt. I know by entrusting my life to this, this is what I am called to do. I entrust my life to this because I know that is the spirit of hope. And it's very important in these stressing times that we have a proper relationship with hope. Because it is so easy to be discouraged, to give up. It's so easy when we see ourselves or our family or our neighbors hauled away. This is happening here. This is not just abstract someplace else. This is happening here. So what do we do? How do we have hope? How do we engage? I really can't stand the word engaged Buddhism. It makes me crazy. All Buddhism is engaged Buddhism. If you're in a monastery, you're engaged. When you're studying the Dharma, you're engaged. Because it's all a part of an interconnected world that's alive with what we are. Great determination is not grim. I've said this many times. Bodhisattvas, we are not being asked to be grim bodhisattvas. We should listen to great music. We should dance. We should feed each other good food. Last night, Shinshu and I went to a reading. Just the most beautiful writing. It was just wonderful. Poetry and stories. Wow, I was so impressed. You know, it's nourishing. So, it's super. This great determination only works with great kindness and nourishment. Hope is a way of life. It's a bodhisattva's way of life. So our lives require all three. And each of us finds our way to sustain ourselves. And if we cultivate these three and we enter the question of how, the question of koan, we live the life of bodhisattva. The reality and beauty of our lives come forth, sometimes at very odd moments. If we don't keep front and center in our lives the effort to return to our true selves in each moment with all beings, then we can easily add suffering to ourselves and others. We can burn out. We can become discouraged. So we're not engaging in this question of how or this practice of Genjo Koan as a means of solving a problem. Solving a problem is a part of our life, but if we are always engaged in solving problems, then everything becomes a problem. But as the basis of our life, the basis, our orientation, we keep it simple. Don't think too much. Enough, but not too much. Don't try and make it special, lofty, somehow disengaged, you know, transcendent. Of course it's transcendent, so are you. Just this. Just stay close to what's happening. That's enough. There's a wonderful Zen teacher named Zenju Earthlin Manuel. And I came across a piece that she wrote not that long ago. It's actually in that book. I can't remember the name of it. We have a copy of it here.
Hidden Lamp.
And in this little story that she wrote, this response to a koan, the story is that there was an abbess, and in her nunnery, monastery, convent, there was a mirror. People would sit in front of the mirror and ask, where is a single feeling, a simple thought, a single thought in the mirror image at which I gaze? So Zenju decided to take this seriously and concretely, and she decided that 5 minutes each day she would stare in the mirror and ask this question. She says, looking into a mirror may seem easy, but being honest with what we see is difficult. This is Ozen, right? Sitting down, what's the problem? You sit down on the floor or a chair, and you just pay attention. Like, how difficult is that, right? But what we see, and really seeing, can be difficult. So she says, on the first day, I didn't see anything because I was afraid of seeing an old lady. My eyes constantly turned away. So this is often what happens when we engage, right? Oh, no, don't want to see that. I'm afraid of what I'll see. On the second day, I spent time plucking the hairs from my chin. I could see them clearly, the white hairs against my dark skin. They provided a nice distraction. On the third day, I thought I should grow my hair longer so that the thinning parts would disappear. I remembered my mother's hair thinning in the same places when she was my age. Still, I didn't want to see my mother in me, nor see an old lady in myself. It's quite ordinary, isn't it? We think koan practice or engaging in your koan is going to be some big, like, fireworks. No. Oh, I see the hairs on my chin. Oh, when I sit down and sit zazen, I see all my petty mind. That's it. On the fourth day, as I looked in the mirror, I wondered what an old lady looked like. So I spent much of my day examining women as I walked in the world, deciding who looked old and who didn't. And, by the way, paying attention to a category of human beings that are often not seen. On the fifth day, I decided I must be old because my neck skin was beginning to sag like I had seen in the so-called old women the day before. On the sixth day, I cried in front of the mirror. I felt I had no control of my stumbling into old age. I felt my death was closer than ever before. On the seventh day, I saw fear in the tightness of my lips, confusion in the brow. I thought, what a tough journey life is. When I looked deeper, without an idea in my head, just the question, what is old? And I saw a courageous woman willing at least to look at herself. When I look in a mirror, I see a black face. In the past, I have responded to being black with painful emotions. However, through Zazen, when I see my black face, I am aware of the suffering that arises. I see the old pain rising in the moment of looking in the mirror. I wait for my response to pass as it is guaranteed to. And in that passing, I see more of who I am and not so much how I appear. This story of how she goes on from there. This story of her engagement with this question, what is old, with this practice of looking in the mirror, this is an example. This is a way in which when we engage with how, when we engage with koan, when we engage with the spirit, we are drawn down into something that is beyond, that is both absolutely particular in who we are, and it absolutely has to do with our family being deported, or the person, there's not enough beds in the homeless shelter, or there's flooding in what part of town? All of this particularity is all there. And at the same time, we touch something universal, which is liberating. That's the point. It's liberating. It's not our personal responsibility. No, it is our personal responsibility. It's not our own little silo. It's actually touching reality itself. So I would encourage you to perhaps find a koan in your life. Look in the mirror for 5 minutes a day. Pay attention to how you respond to injustice. Wonder how. How? What sustains you? What returns you to great faith? What supports the development of great doubt? Where does great determination come from? If you think it's just yours, you'll burn out, I guarantee it. So think about it. I really want to encourage you to think about these things and then bring them back here. This is our touchstone. This beautiful new space is our touchstone to sustain our lives, our bodhisattva lives, and give to each other the recognition and joyful conversation and aliveness and support that keeps us really not only going, but deepening and expressing our practice. In silence, as we sit, in laughter, in mutual acknowledgement, and in response to the suffering of the world. Thank you.